Over the past few weeks, we've been pursuing a theme on Sunday evenings, a theme of growing in our Christian faith. And as we've done so, we've looked at subjects like prayer, at Christian giving, we've looked at fasting. It seems that fasting's an interesting subject. I was just looking today as I was putting up the morning sermon onto the website. I can see how many downloads there are of the different messages, and the fasting message for some reason has had lots more downloads than any others recently. It must be a subject that is of maybe current interest among Christians. But anyway, we've covered a lot of different ground. We've still got a few themes to go. And one of the themes I want to think about tonight is the theme of worship. That we can grow in our relationship with God, grow as Christians, grow in our character through worship. And that brings us to John chapter 4. And let's read there again verses 23 and 24, where Jesus is speaking with the Samaritan woman and says to her, "A time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and in truth." Now, worship is a theme that is regarded, I think, by many people as slightly strange, or as a mark of too great enthusiasm among Christians, that worship is something that people regard as just being for maybe the extra keen Christian, the specialist Christian who's got a particular thing about perhaps singing in church or whatever. It's funny that, though, because in our society, worship is going on all over the place. We don't bat an eyelid when perhaps in the entertainment realm or in the sports realm, some person becomes an icon and becomes the object of worship of their adoring fans, of the spectators at the event that they are participating in. And if we worship, and we do, if we worship sports icons and entertainment personalities, mere men and women, then should we not worship the living God? And should we not learn to do worship in a way that is worthy of him? So let's think today and tonight about growing in worship. But before we can think about growing through worshipping, maybe we need to actually grow enough so that we begin to worship. I think often we need to even start worshipping. And by that you'd be thinking about, wait a minute, Roddy, we've already been worshipping this evening. We've been singing the psalms and the songs. But that isn't necessarily worship. Just because our lips are moving, just because we're in harmony in our song, doesn't mean we're actually personally addressing God. And it doesn't mean that we're doing so in the right attitude. So sometimes I need to grow, and maybe we all need to grow, in order to even begin to worship God truly. And there are three things, I think, that this exchange between Jesus and this woman highlight, which we can grow into and maybe truly experience worship as a result of doing so. The first one is we need to grow in our recognition of God. In our recognition of God. In verse 23, Jesus says that the Father is seeking worshippers. He is seeking worship. Immediately, a lot of people will say, well, you know, there you go. God has an ego, and he's needing his ego fed. Now, if I was seeking worship, that would be the case. If I was seeking worship, it would be because I had some felt need, some sense of deficiency that you could supply. And it's a temptation, let me be frank, for many preachers to want to preach such great messages that when they go down and shake hands with the congregation, everyone will be patting them on the back and saying, you know, well done, that was fantastic. And it's a temptation for any of us who take any public role to want that, whether you're wanting to score a goal for your football team or whether you're wanting just to do your job well and get recognition. We all like to get that kind of affirmation, which can be almost like worship, because we have egos. But God is not like that. God didn't create people because he needed their worship. Didn't create the angels because he needed worship. The reason why we should worship God is not to supply something in God that he lacks, because he lacks nothing. The reason why we should worship is because it shows that we're beginning to recognize who God is. In other words, people worship when they really see what God is like and are willing to admit it and to acknowledge it before him. People worship when they see God clearly. Sometimes we treat God as though he was like people. Psalm 50, verse 21, "You thought I was altogether like you," God says. But worship begins when we see that God isn't like us. He's not an ego seeking feeding. God is God seeking that we would see him clearly, and in recognizing who he is, give him what is his due. God seeks worship then for our benefit, not for his benefit. Because when we see him clearly, as we just sang, for example, in Revelation 5, that's when we begin to worship. The angels, the church represented by the 24 elders in the book of Revelation, chapter 4 and 5, they're worshipping because they see God. That's all it takes. They simply see. And seeing God, such as the splendor of the vision of who he is, evokes from them and brings out of them a response of worship. Now, of course, there are instances in the Bible story where people see God and hate him. They see him and they hate him. In Revelation chapter 6, for example, there are those who steadfastly refuse to bow to his reign. And when they do see God and they see his majesty and they see the glory of his character and his holiness, they recognize him for what he is. But instead of worshipping, they call on the rocks to cover them and the mountains to fall on them. They want to hide away from the face of his glory. Maybe that's then why Jesus says in verse 23 that it's the Father who seeks worshippers. It's those who recognize God for who he is. A father, a good father, a father of the kind of character we sang of in Psalm 145, who's compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness. That kind of father. Worship then is when we come as children to the best possible father and just simply tell him what we feel he is due to be told about our thanksgiving, our appreciation, our adoration towards him. So, first question for you and for me as we think about worship is, have we progressed to the point where we really recognize God? That he's not like us, and really recognize him as a glorious, a great, and a good father. Then the second thing that comes out of this passage is, to begin worship, you have to grow not only in your recognition of God, but also in your right thinking about God. Because Jesus says in verse 23, the true worshippers worship in spirit and truth, he says, in truth. Now the Samaritans, the woman Jesus is speaking as one of them, were a group of people, they still exist today as a discrete population in the Middle East. They originally formed through the intermarriage of Israelites with a group of people that the Assyrian nation in the 8th century BC brought into Palestine and settled in the area that we call Samaria. And these foreigners who were brought in intermarried with the Israelites, and because they were a mixed group, those who had not intermarried with the Israelites regarded them with suspicion and as a lesser breed. And while the Israelites, who had remained faithful to their purity as a nation, moved on and God kept dealing with them through the prophets and ultimately now with Jesus, the Samaritans were kind of stuck with the religious state that they were in the 8th century BC, which was that they had the books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers and Deuteronomy, and that was their Bible. And that's the way it is with them today. They still hold by these five books. But Jesus says that there's something wrong with their worship. Verse 22, you Samaritans worship what you do not know. Now, it's not that what they do is outrageously wrong. I mean, some religions in the world are just outrageously wrong. Religions which have idols, religions which have multitudes of different gods, pagan religions, are just wildly off the mark. Wildly off the mark. But the Samaritans weren't like that. Perhaps then what they thought was, well, we're Samaritans, and we have our mountain where we worship, and we have our holy book, and we keep ourselves apart from the Israelites because they keep themselves apart from us, and we do our thing and they do their thing, and we have our ways of approaching God and they have their ways, and you know, God accepts us because of what we do and accepts them because of what they do. And it's a very common view that people have of God. You know, you have your religion and God accepts you because you have your religion. It may be different to the next person's religion, but you have your religion and God must accept you because of that. Now that, if you think about it carefully, is a wrong view of God. It's a wrong view of God because it says God is the kind of God who thinks your religion is the way, your religion is right. And it's very subtle, but many people live like this, and because they live like this, they don't worship in truth. They live on the basis of their religion, and they really come to God and say, well, you know, here I am, I have my way of doing things, I go to church, I try to lead a good life, and I have a bit of charity in my life, and I'm a decent neighbour, and I'm a family person, and so on. And here I am, God, please accept me because of this. And the Samaritans were like that, and the Jewish people, many of them, were like that too. And many people who are nominally Christian are the same. They're like that. They have this kind of religion in their lives. And, you know, it's decent. It's respectable. And on that basis, they think to be accepted by God, to approach God. But that's a wrong view of God. Because it's saying God is the kind of God who accepts us through what we do. But God is not the kind of God who accepts us through what we do. God is the kind of God who accepts us through what Jesus did. And that's a totally different thing. God is the kind of God who accepts me and you, not because I managed to meet the standard or because I managed to pass the test. God is the kind of God who accepts me and you because of my trust that Jesus has done everything to make me acceptable before God. And so the Samaritans could never get that because they wouldn't find that in Genesis to Deuteronomy. But even many people who come to church, who should find that in their Bibles, choose instead to trust in their religion. That's the wrong view of God. It makes God so small that we can be good enough for him, that we can present ourselves sufficiently acceptable to be a match for his presence and his majesty and his glory and his holiness. And we just cannot. So if we're going to worship God in truth, then the foundation of that has to be the living water that Jesus speaks about giving this woman. Verse 10, for example. The foundation has to be what Jesus gives to us. The foundation of true worship is a trust in Jesus and what he is to us. And if we have that trust, that conviction that God can only accept me because of Jesus, then out of that, I can begin to approach God in the right way, because I'm not being self-righteous. I'm not saying to God, look at me, look at my worship, look at my religion, look at my good works. I'm saying to God, thank you for Jesus. I'm saying to God, look at Jesus. Look on what he has done for me. And without him, I cannot be accepted, but through him, I know I am accepted. Thank you for what you've given me in Jesus. It's a completely different thing. And that's what the Samaritans just couldn't have, because they didn't have a right knowledge of Jesus, of Messiah. But now Jesus has come personally to give it to them. And as you know, the story goes on to a point where they truly receive great blessing from him. So if we're going to worship in a way that we can grow through, we have to first grow to the point where we recognise God for who he is and where we have right thinking about God. But then there's a third thing, and that is we need to relish God. We need to delight in who he is. Jesus says the worshippers, the true worshippers, verse 23, will worship the Father in spirit. And that's another step to growth that you and I have to take. If we're going to worship, we have to worship in spirit. Now Jesus is speaking in response to what the woman says in verse 20. Our fathers worshipped. She's the one that raises the whole subject of worship. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, Mount Gerizim in Samaria. But you Jews claim that the place where you must worship is on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. And Jesus says, believe me, woman, time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. Jesus is saying that the woman is making a very common mistake. And the common mistake is, as long as you're on the right mountain, it's worship. Or as long as you're in the right church, it's worship. As long as you're in Jerusalem, as long as you're in Plockton Church, as long as you're singing psalms, or as long as you're singing a Stuart Town End hymn, or as long as it's traditional, or as long as it's popular, or as long as it's what you like, it's worship. But it's not like that. Worship doesn't happen just because you're in the right place, or using the right song, or the right tune. It doesn't happen just because of posture or place or the poetry that you've got. God seeks your spirit tonight. He's not just seeking that your lips will say the right words or that your feet will be standing in the right place. God is seeking your spirit. He's seeking your mind, your emotions, your heart, your will. He's seeking that you personally engage with him. So it's not just about relishing a church service or a good old-fashioned hymn book, sing-song or whatever it is. It's about delighting in God the Father. Worship is just like a healthy plant that grows towards the light. Worship is us growing towards the light of God, seeking that light, delighting in it. God is spirit, says Jesus. And so when we worship, we have to focus upon what is spirit, not upon just the outward things, the mountain, the building, even the people, or the particular style of worship that we like. We're worshipping the unseen, and we have to engage with the unseen. We have to engage with God. So there's three challenges for us all. Challenges to help us to grow to the point where we can even begin to worship. We must recognize God for who he is. We must think in the right way about God, that he saves us through Jesus, not through our religion. And we must relish God. It's God we're about when we worship, and we must truly be focused upon him. And if we do these things, then indeed we may begin to worship. And it's a challenge, because this is really something that we find by nature very difficult. I was thinking back to when I were a lad, going to church intermittently in Alness, in the Church of Scotland there, Roskeen Church of Scotland. And they always seemed to have very long hymns, with lots and lots of verses. And the only thing that I really got out of it was good for my learning fractions. You might think, how is that? Well, it shows the kind of perverse mind I have. I used to look at a hymn and I'd say, right, we've got six verses to go. Okay, and then we'd sung one and say, right, that's 1/6, 5/6 to go. And we sung two, and then I'd say, well, that's a third. We're a third of the way, because I really just couldn't get it. I didn't understand worship. I wasn't engaging with God in any sense. And then if it got really complicated, maybe there were seven verses and we were 5.5 verses through. Well, what's that? That's 11/14. And my fractions were getting better and better as we sang, but my worship wasn't happening at all. And I just say that. I mean, it's a bit trite for me to say that, but it's an illustration just of how disconnected my heart was from what I was doing. My lips were moving. I was singing in tune, I think. I was singing the right words. They were good words. They were true words. But I wasn't worshipping the Father in spirit and truth. True worship is different. True worship is not that you can't, like me, just longing for the end, saying, well, there's 3/14 of the hymn left to go. Soon it'll be only 2/14 or 1/7 or whatever, and soon it'll be over. True worship forces you to slow down. You have to take time. You have to reprioritize. You can't be saying, well, I just want this to be over. You have to want to do it. And that's true if you're singing, it's true if you're praying as well. Because although I'm speaking about sung worship, as I've said in this series about prayer and about the Lord's Prayer, much of the Lord's Prayer is worship. Hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done. It's worship. Yours is the kingdom, the power and the glory. And if you're praying or singing worship, you have to slow down. And if you're praying in worship, then you have to base perhaps your prayed worship on perhaps a Bible reading. And I've already spoken about that, about taking time and taking the effort and the discipline to perhaps use the Bible as a springboard. When you think about what it says, maybe write down, notepad. Remember all these things we were talking about, using a notepad, writing down perhaps reasons for praise from the passage. and then speaking them out to God and elaborating on them as you go along. However, as you do this, as you recognise God, as you recognise His character, as you recognise His glory, as you recognise the greatness of His works and of His words, as you do that, and as you do it in truth, trusting in Jesus, the Saviour God has given to you, and as you do it, delighting in God. As you do it truly enjoying God, then you will grow. True worship is something in which you grow. As you grow to begin to worship, you will then grow in worship. Things happen in your heart when you truly worship. When you truly worship, you become more positive about life. You become less complaining. Your spirit sweetens. Faith and hope and love and joy flow from your heart. And the bigger God appears in your vision, the greater your Father in heaven appears, the smaller will your problems appear to be. Your life will change as you worship. You will grow in your relationship with God. You'll grow as a person. You'll grow to become the character whom God destined you to be. As we finish, I'm just going to quote from someone I was reading on this subject. It's a big book I've got on my shelf by a man called Wayne Grudem. And it's a big book of systematic theology. And he's got this brilliant chapter on worship. And this is what he says. He says, it's appropriate to ask whether there is much genuine, heartfelt, deep worship in our churches. In many evangelical churches, people do not truly worship God in their hearts until the last hymn. After the sermon has focused their attention on who God is, so that they begin to rejoice in God with a heart full of praise. But then, just when heartfelt worship has begun, the service abruptly ends. It should just be beginning, he says. If genuine worship is lacking in our churches, we should ask how we can bring ourselves to experience much more of the depth and richness of worship, which is the natural response of the believing heart to a clear awareness of God's presence and character. Well, I hope that you've been raised up a little so that as we sing our final psalm tonight, you will have a sense of recognising God, of relishing God, and of rightly resting in what Jesus has done for you. I think our practice in the Free Church is often really strange when it comes to the psalms. You notice that almost all the time, unless the psalms are very short, we just sing bits of the psalms. The psalms were never meant to be sung like that. They were written in order to be sung as a whole. Can you imagine singing our way through Psalm 106 or Psalm 105 or Psalm 78 or Psalm 119? Long psalms, but that's how they were meant. Just shows how we're in a hurry compared to the Israelites in times past. So tonight we're going to sing a longer section. We're going to sing the whole of Psalm 103 as we finish the service tonight. Okay, so that's maybe twice as long. Do not do anything with fractions in your heads as we sing. But it gives us a chance just to respond a bit more fully to the theme that we've been thinking about tonight.